Welcome to the Change Society podcast. I'm your host, Pat Lines. Today, we've got two fabulous guests, very close to my business. Martin McPhee, who is our NED and a member of our board. Extensive experience on the front line of transformation, advising executives all over the globe. Previous background in Accenture, Cisco, and more recently as operations advisor to Advent Private Equity. And of course, our very own Jacqueline Shakespeare, operating partner. So what these two don't know about change and transformation is probably not worth knowing. We're going to be discussing the stat, why 84% of change and transformation initiatives fail to reach their intended objective. It's a stat that has to change, and we're covering many things around digital transformation being a buzzword. What are the main traps and barriers in the ways of effective change? What are the one thing that really needs to change in order to reverse this stat? Amongst all sorts of other bits and pieces that you will find very useful. So without further ado, over to the show. Jacqueline, Martin, welcome to a society session, the Change Society podcast. I probably, in the last sort of 3 months, have spent a lot of time with both of you, and we've been threatening to jump on a session and have a conversation that we can maybe share with some of the Change Society and our wider audience. So look, the theme of today, 84% of transformations fail. It's a stat that's going in the wrong direction. I remember when I set this business up, it was 70%. It's looking at 84, 85% now, depending on what publications you're looking at, you know, what kind of stats that you're looking at. And even reading the other day, I think it was in the US alone, was it $1.3 trillion was poured into digital change. And obviously 70% of that, you know, has been wasted. So it's a big problem. But before we get into that, because that is the theme of today, I thought it'd be good for you both just to do, you know, a quick introduction, who you are, what you do, just for the listeners. So Jacqueline, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an operating partner here at SNS. I've been involved in change and transformation for all of my career, worked in many different industries, so telco, consultancy, financial services, with organisations such as BCG and MasterCard and EE. And I've always worked on the delivery side, and I work now mainly client side as well, focusing on the delivery and sometimes the governance of it as well. My specialisms now are strategy to execution, being change ready, and people and culture.
Fantastic. Martin McPhee?
Well, that's a hard one to follow.
You're too kind.
Yes. much like Jax, I've been involved in change and transformation for too many years that I care to remember. For the last 4 years, I've been working with many of the large-scale private equities, helping them look at companies and how digital transformation can actually enable them to become more mobile, agile, and global. Prior to that, I worked with two wonderful global companies called Cisco, and where I spent 3 years there working for John Chambers, helping him think about all things IoT, digital, and what that meant for changes in society, countries, and enterprises. And then prior to that, I had a decade at Accenture, where I helped Accenture build their technology outsourcing and consulting business, very proudly, from a couple hundred million to $3.5 billion when I left, with 15,000 people working around the world.
Fantastic. So what I like about this, we've got two different perspectives on the problem. So Martin, you know, copious amounts of experience with management consulting, more recent times, private equity, working with you know, board CEOs and other executive members. Then, of course, Jax, you know, client side change agent for sort of the last 15, 20 years. So, question to you both, and feel free for one of you to step up first. But why is this stat going in the wrong way? Why are 84% of change initiatives and transformations failing, in your views?
Jax, would you like me to have a go at that?
Go on, you go first.
There you go. I think the key thing, Pat, and there's been a lot of, you know, this is an industry that uses lots of buzzwords. And the word that's been going around for the last really 6-7 years is digital transformation. And, you know, initially it was, so what is digital? What does that mean? Well, today it's actually more than a buzzword for modern businesses. You know, I believe that the lines are being blurred between business and technology change, just driven by so many disruptive influences, trends, and market transitions. And, you know, today that's all happening at a time when economic pressure is stressing the balance sheet. As an industry, change was actually built 25 years ago when many companies were building ERP projects that took multiple years. And what's happened over the last 10 and why the stat is going the wrong way, I like to accredit someone famous called Albert Einstein, which is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results. People are trying to crack the problem of digital transformation with the same processes, the same approach, the same linear build and change world that was successful for ERP. And it's just not successful for today's company in the speed that they need to actually move and how fast exponential change is happening.
Yeah, and I think just to build on what Martin's saying there, you know, the world that we live in now is volatile, disruptive, and there's a pace of change that we've just never seen before as human beings operating in a commercial environment. And we are much more comfortable when we understand how our actions drive certain outcomes. So when we're working in a simple or a complicated environment, that all makes sense to us. But change these days isn't. It's complex because there are so many different factors at play. And we can't predetermine an outcome based on our own actions. So a natural human response to that is to try and put more control around it. So we might build lengthy and detailed project plans. We might put for some very strict governance around the change that we're trying to do. But actually, that's not when we're thriving and successful in a change environment. So I think that's one of the reasons that why we're seeing that statistic kind of go higher and higher in effect.
So if we look at, Martin, in the context that you were saying, 25 years ago, the way people did change, you know, looking at sort of the Big Bang approach to ERP programs and all those kind of good things. So if we set that in the context of, organizations set up back then and the way that organizations need to be set up today, what do you see as the main sort of traps and barriers? And this question's to both of you. In the way for effective change to come through this decade to help organizations thrive. What do you see in the sort of old organizational debt structure, if you like, that is in the way for some of the progress that we'd all like to see?
Well, as I said earlier, Pat, this is not anything new. You know, I sat 7 years ago at Cisco doing all of the kind of primary research around how GDP would change in terms of digital transformation for countries like India, the UK, and on. And much has been written kind of dissecting the reason for digital transformation fail. And it's kind of interesting. I hear a lot from experts settling on it's kind of people, employees, it's organizational culture, and it's leadership is the weak links. Well, kind of I step back, the first thing I kind of look at is I don't think that people are the problem. You're seeing world-class organizations who lead the way in their own area of expertise, failing to kind of achieve what they want to achieve from the transformation of their own company. So most initiatives, whether it's digitizing core processes, instilling new technology, downsizing, restructuring, etc., or even trying to change the corporate culture, have that low success rate. I think in the end of the day, when I come down to it, is it's cracking the new code. And one of the new areas of discipline that I think the companies need to think about is strategy. You know, leading effective change is not just something that starts with, a number of consultants together, the board, the management team got together, defined a strategy, and then decided to roll it out to the greater organization. It kind of is something that starts at the top the moment that you start to talk about strategy. because change must start at the very top. I just think that all too often, senior teams believe that they're actually on board with a new strategy, and that it's actually the rest of the organization that creates that resistance, and that's what they need to address. But I don't think that's true, Pat. I think in the end of the day, people underestimate getting buy-in and building consensus at the highest level organization is not nearly as easy as it seems. Back to what Jax was saying, the speed that you need to move, if you don't have people aligned right at the very start of the strategy, right at the very start of the journey, the wheels can come off very quickly.
And just, you made me think of something there, Martin, in terms of how we work today versus how we worked 100 years ago. And we really haven't changed very much in terms of our organisational design and how we're structured within an organisation. Some companies now are looking much more at the operating model, which looks much broader in terms of the processes and the technology and how we're working together. But a lot of the time, we still focus on our organisational design, which drives siloed thinking. It drives us to focus on tasks rather than outcomes. And it drives transactional behaviour as well. And actually what we need to be doing is shifting that to working collaboratively, irrespective of what team you're in, focusing on the outcome and the delivery of that outcome, to kind of a brilliant level of quality. And that also means that we need to be linking the strategy, as Martin says, right through, needs to be that really clear link right through from strategy to the work that the teams, or the outcome that the teams are working on.
Just to add to that part, and it is around structure, it's around communication, it's around strategy. But the reality is a lot of us who's kind of grown up in this area, we were educated to think in a linear manner and not an exponential manner. Yeah. We move into enterprise organizations and we are measured by X percent increase in sales or Y increase benefit in operational performance. We are not rewarded for thinking exponentially, from looking at how you can disrupt something that was designed and is operating 20, 30 years and looking at how you can actually do something more effective for your customer or drive operational efficiencies. So as I say, when you start to look at that strategy, it's first of all, communicate with inspiration behind the change so that everyone gets on the same page, but getting that kind of buy-in and looking at all aspects, whether it's strategy, whether it's organizational structure, whether it's communications, whether it's actually the team and the skills that you have in your team. You know, these are all the areas that you want to test up front to really understand, have you got that likelihood of success? And the wonderful thing about an ERP project of 25 years ago, it would take 3 years. You had lots of slow time to work out where was the gaps, let's fill that gap, let's upskill, let's do that. But a change project at this moment in time can be, you know, let's look at the events of recently where a global workforce moved from working in an office to working at home. If you start to actually look at the big video providers, Cisco with their WebEx, Microsoft with their Teams, and so on, the stats out there are quite startling. They reckon that digital transformation of working practices accelerated 6 years in 6 weeks. So it's the weeks to drive change rather than what historically allowed for a lot of time.
What would you say is the kind of one thing that would that really needs to change to kind of change the script? So if we put it on the sort of frame of, I think, Martin, you mentioned cracking the new code of you know, delivering change and delivering change in this new era. What do you think is the kind of the one thing that has to change to start, you know, cracking that new code?
The challenge part is if it was one thing, it would be easy and then anyone could do it.
So if we say cracking the new code, so if we framed it in a different way, 84% of transformations fail. I mean, this is quite a binary thing, but just in the interest of this conversation, 16% succeed or at least deliver some sort of improvement to the organization. So if we think there's there's things that people do in the 16 that they don't do in the 84. What would you say are some of the sort of hallmarks of things that should be done to change the script on that, on that stat and reverse it?
Okay. So if I go through all of my career path and many things that I wanted to drive in a business, there was many world-class organizations who could come in and provide an assessment of, if I take Accenture, what did high performance look like? What did a high performance finance organization look like? What did a high performance IT organization look like? Enabled you to kind of benchmark against what best in class looked like, understand your maturity, and be able to prioritize and take steps to think about in each of those elements your strategy. The reality is from I will talk client side, many of the clients that I've engaged with, you always had this discussion is, we had a good strategy and we believed in that strategy, but we didn't manage the change very well. And you look at the consulting partner, and the consulting partner had actually built what it was the client actually wanted. But as I kind of looked at it, there was a nice brand new car lying in the driveway, but actually no one knew how to drive it, because at the end of the day, they hadn't looked at all aspects of change. So what is the thing that you can do differently? And to me, I think realistically, some of the things of digitization that's actually important this moment in time around data science and analytics and artificial intelligence is actually starting to become a reality in this industry, and to help organizations really understand how complex this journey is, what is the aspects that they need to understand with the problem, and help boards, management teams align and create that light bulb moment to help them understand and align on what they collectively need to do to actually drive successful change. And that's the biggest thing. It's, I look at many other stats, and one of the biggest stats that come out there is, why does change fail? Well, teams work in silos.
Yep.
And it's the silos that, if you're trying to move fast and everyone's disconnected by 5%, well, actually, by the time you try to get the outcome of the change they're trying to drive across a full organization, then again, that's just kind of a recipe for either one or two things. Either the project fails to achieve what it does, what it set out to do, it either gets de-scoped to allow it to come within a certain budget, or if you use a little stat from the Standish Group says 53% of these projects end up costing 189% of the budget. So many boards, many executive teams wouldn't even enter into the change project to start with, because it's not yielding the kind of operational benefits or new customer experience that they do. So, you know, unfortunately, Pat, I'm not giving you one thing there, because it is complex. But the good thing about it is, I do think with data science and analytics, that we're starting to see insights that can help us really drive a greater likelihood of change success.
And I think, you know, to add to that, and Martin and I have talked about this at length over the last few months as well, and I think it comes back to this complexity and the question of how do we best succeed in a complex world. That's the critical question for me. And there's complexity everywhere in our lives, right? It's not just within business, it's within our personal lives as well. And whether it's for me personally, and I liken it to being a working mother. So that's quite complex. You're trying to develop and enjoy a career as well as be the mother that you want at home. And it's exactly the same thing. And for me, the way to address it is to get really strong foundations in place. So the change in hand, absolutely, be visionary, focus on all of that. But it's really looking, it's being brave and breathing and looking inwardly inside your organization and saying, well, where do we need to strengthen ourselves to set ourselves up for the best possible chance of success through this quite disruptive and challenging change journey that we're going to go through and continue going through for the foreseeable future. You know, this isn't going to change as well. And when you get those foundations in place, it's not just about enabling you to be brilliant in the change that you're managing in that period of time, it's really setting yourself up for future success as well.
So I'm going to change it slightly. So if we talk about sustainability, why is it that most organizations historically and still now treating change as a commodity, do you think?
It's a very, very good question, Pat. And the answer to why is organizations treating change as a commodity, I honestly don't know. Because if you're sitting there as a leader, and as a leader, you're an incredibly smart individual who's had a phenomenally successful career, and you're sitting there saying to yourself, I'm about to actually embark on this change initiative, and 84% of change initiatives fail. And for those that actually do kind of serve their time, 53% of them cost 189%. Why is it I think I'm one of the 16%? And those smart people, how do they know what success looks like if you don't measure it? Mm. And, you know, I do come back to what I kind of said there. I think organizations best positioned to drive successful change are the ones that set themselves up well right from the start.
Yep.
They use digitization to their benefit. They collect the right kind of data. They use predictive analytic models to get themselves on the right path. And then they prioritize the right activity required to drive successful outcomes. And that is the key to it. And back to, I think, something that Jack's mentioned earlier, it's like you sit down with Lena and go, well, I hired the best program manager that had been, and they had a great track record. And then I hired another 20 people that have got great success of change. And I go, have the 20 people ever worked together before? No. Well, how do you expect them to be a highly synchronized team that can drive change? The second aspect is, well, we had a project plan. That project plan had 5,269 lines. And I go, what was on line 4,600? They go, I don't know. And this is the problem, is as individuals, with the amount of data that we get, you know, social media, email, etc., how do you drive effective change if you're not understanding what is the right data you need to know, what is the right path, and how you prioritize that activity, and then use that data to continually measure, are you on track? You know, and there is a number of simple things that you can actually do. But I go back, people are using approaches, processes, capabilities, and tools that worked in an era that was yesterday. And it's about cracking that code of understanding the blueprint that helps them be successful today.
Mm. So bringing in some sort of kind of gamification and data science and analytics into managing and driving the change process to create something sustainable. Is that what you're saying, Martin?
Yeah. Well, two things. But you'll never do anything without people. But the first aspect is, and this I go back to what I said earlier, data science and analytics is becoming a reality. The maturity of understanding really how individual bias and kind of company bias and culture can influence what change is something that helps with sustainability. But this goes beyond being able to deploy a new tool or a process. Mm-hmm. You know, you've heard me say this many times, a fool with a tool is still a fool. It needs data, it needs analytics, it needs predictive analysis to define the right path. But then you need the right skill sets to actually execute on that prioritized journey. So therefore, 1 + 1 = 3. If you have a tool, tool's going to give you the insight. You just don't know what to do with the tool. If you bring people in that are unstructured, they don't play as a team. 1 + 1 =, you know, gives you a greater likelihood of success.
I also think, in terms of your question earlier about transactional, I think one of the reasons we're seeing this behavior within organizations is because of the pressure that they're under. So organizationally, and the boards themselves are under such pressure, whether it be from parent companies or, you know, a desperation to keep up with competition in the market or whatever that is, they've become quite reactive in terms of their strategy and how forward thinking they are. And they're just reacting to market pressures and board pressures and so on. And that drives a much shorter term view in terms of how to approach change and the actions that are taken.
So Pat, just on this, I was talking to a client the other day there, very, very senior person, chief executive in a financial services organization. And I was talking around this principle of data science and predictive analytics, and actually a tool that enables you to actually have a scoring metrics across all of the areas of change. And interestingly, that CEO quickly got onto the situation where I did say to him, I said, look, if you score above 80%, then actually it doesn't mean that you guarantee to have a successful outcome. But you know what? You've got a good chance of it. If you get between 50 and 80%, then you know what? You really should be testing the budget, because this is all about expectation management. You might be able to pull off the transformation, but it's going to cost more that's in this business case. Because I get that. And then he turned and said, and if it's below 50%, I should stop the project, shouldn't I? And I went, yes. Because your chance of success is so low. Would you rather have that news today and be able to do something about it? Or do you want to wait until you're 5 months into the project, you've spent £10 million, and you're kind of saying to yourself, hindsight is a wonderful thing. Well, actually, you know what? I'd like to know the hindsight up front. And the predictive analytics might not be perfect, but at the end of the day, it's given me great insight into how my organization's going to behave.
It must be terrifying being a CEO or a COO and looking at that 16% success. And how can you be confident as an organization that you're going to be in that 16%? That's really what people want to do to de-risk their change. That's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. And by the way, today, if you look at what's happening in the global world and what's happening with this horrible pandemic, being a CEO is even harder. You know, you've got an employee workforce that's changing the way they're working. You have got significant challenges on liquidity because the business has changed. And you're sitting there at this moment in time knowing that if you don't change, you will not be competitive in what a post-pandemic world looked like. But when you're sitting there and you're saying technology, transformation, etc., is something I need to do, but you're looking at a stat that says 84% is failing and it's getting higher. Wow, that takes a brave individual to actually say, I'm going to go to the board and, you know, hang my hat on this multi-million pound project that's going to be the savior of theirs. So it is difficult. And as I said to the CEO, you know, first of all, you know, having that type of assessment, having that analytics gives you not only insight into how you as an individual react from a change bias and your things, but actually across your leadership team, your management and your company. And that is an insight as a CEO that allows you to have a better prediction on what the future could look like.
Do you think this kind of short-termism versus long-term views, that needs to change? If we look at the FTSEs, at the moment, let's just call it FTSE 500 and the average tenure of a CEO. Do you think that's part of the problem with the stats as they are, that some of them are too fearful to even embark on this in the first place? They'd rather push it down the road and sweat as much profit as possible and stay out the firing line or outsource it. Do you think that's part of the problem, or? You've got a right smile there, so maybe you're thinking.
No, you just made me smile because it took me back to a lunch I had in New York about, 10 years ago, when a very famous global CIO of one of the big investment banks talked to me on that specific topic of, he said to me, I forgot everything that he taught me, because in the end of the day, it was about short-termism, because the average tenure of a CIO back then was 3 years, and you can't go into long-term disruptive change. The reality today, Pat, and look, some industries don't have to think too heavily about disruption, but not many. If you're in the telecommunications industry, you're in the technology industry, you're in the financial services, etc., you have got disruptive companies basically attacking your profit base all of the time. So, you know, it's a horrible thing to say that every company must be driving change and must have change at the heart of its agenda. But that is the reality today, Pat. And one of the things I was very, very proud I set up at Cisco was a joint venture with IMD, the Global Business School based out in Switzerland, to set up the Center for Digital Transformation. And they did some phenomenal primary research around the speed of change. And the reality is what they analyzed is, if you look at the Fortune 100, digital transformation can actually change the full structure of the the Fortune 100 within 3 years. It used to be 10, 12 for technology and business models to change. So the speed of change means that if you're not thinking about your competition, not thinking about how you engage with your clients differently, not think about transformational projects, then the reality is your own business model is going to be attacked. So it's an imperative now.
It's that published research as well.
Yes.
Share it in the show notes afterwards.
Yes, I can give you the published research from IMD and Cisco, primary research on what's called the digital vortex.
Fabulous.
So I think, you know, the point you raised about the tenure or length of time that a board member stays in an organisation inevitably influences how the organisation approaches change. But as Martin says, the world around them is changing at such a pace and so quickly, that starts to pale to be less significant, not into insignificant, but to be less significant. And actually, I think if you get a very strong culture set up around delivering value regularly, which is what we need to be doing in today's age, not having 3-year programs, but delivering value regularly, then the fact that a board member is only around for 2 years, however long it is, becomes less critical, because it becomes less influential in terms of how effectively they can deliver change.
For those brave pathfinders to make that leap sooner rather than later, because it will get easier. It should get easier.
Well, will it get easier? Look, I had the pleasure of working with one of the greatest leaders that the technology industry's seen in the last 25 years, namely John Chambers. And as John used to say, is when he first started in Cisco, his first strategy as CEO looked at the next decade. When he retired as CEO, he actually said his strategy was at best 3 years, but he really focused on 18 months, because John had this wonderful knack of seeing the transitions, but the transitions were happening so fast that he was revisiting effectively, not the core strategy, but learn, evolve, learn, evolve, really every 90 days.
Yeah.
And that is the speed I think we are moving at today. The rate of change and the evolution in business and technology is only going to continue and actually even pick up more speed. So I do think that implementing the right approach and structure and using the right data and the right insights is the foundation of positioning your organization to be more agile, proactive, and ready to come out on top, whatever challenge or opportunity kind of comes to us in the future.
Yeah, I mean, when you say the definition of insanity, a lot of the things that I've been seeing at the front line for years are, you know, most organizations are trying to unpick the past, you know, solve the legacy, and just trying to do something in an organization structure that just isn't fit for purpose. So that totally resonates with me about, it's more about, you know, reverse engineering the future. And I think if we look at the pandemic and COVID, I think what we've also seen, and a lot of the execs I'm talking to, they've tasted extreme change now. No one saw the pandemic coming. Once it came, you know, the board was aligned. You know, they knew what they needed to do in a matter of days, you know, weeks. They got all of the organization pulling in one direction. They cleared the politics and, you know, some of the governance and created a free road for them to then accelerate an outcome of, you know, a global remote working policy, or, you know, driving an extreme piece of change around, you know, the digitization of the workplace. So, you know, that appetite, you know, should be there for further gains. On that note,
yeah, so we've talked a lot about the stats. They're stacked up against you, right? Really scary stats. And we've talked about that's quite a difficult position to be in when you're driving change. And we've talked about how the world's moving at such a pace. And actually, one might listen to this podcast and think, God, that's a bit terrifying. But actually, there is the opportunity. And that's what Martin and I were talking about in terms of when you get it right, it's awesome. Right? And it's the most exciting place to be when you're delivering fantastic change in an organization, because you're really shaping the future of work, you're shaping the future of your country or globally or whatever that might be. And it's brilliant. And you get an engaged workforce who are learning and sharing their knowledge, you're delivering value and great results, and you can see, individuals can see how they're contributing to the vision and the evolution of the company. And it's a brilliant, brilliant place to be. So I just want to make sure that we're kind of pulling out all of those positives of delivering complex change within an organization as well, because none of us would be involved in that if it wasn't a brilliant and exciting place to be.
Yeah, it's a good shout. I mean, I was out for dinner with a CEO last night that, you know, Jackson, you know, one of his comments was, you know, it's great now. All of the old problems that we have are gone. And I actually think they're now gone forever. You know, our company is change ready. It wants change. It likes change. And they actually feel that they're working on, you know, much more interesting work, because, you know, they're geared up for, you know, continuous change now. So, you know, that's just great to see when you hear the success stories coming through. Yeah. I mean, on that note, Jax, sustainability, we talked about that previously. You know, in your view, you know, it's not just about having organizations that are sort of change ready and are able to pivot and, you know, potentially continue to reinvent themselves throughout this decade. But in your view, what are the secrets behind getting that sustainability and that change readiness, and your views and tips to any listeners that might be thinking, okay, I get that, you know, this started off with, you know, quite a negative stat, but actually, you know, there's a real opportunity to improve that. And what's cracking the code there in your view?
Yeah. So for me, we talked a little bit about being change ready, and it is really what it says on the tin there, but that goes hand in hand with sustainability, because when an organization is change ready, and I'll talk about that a little bit, you can deliver change that is sustainable. And when we in SNS talk about being change ready, we are really talking about those foundations of change that we talked about earlier on in the podcast. And so the foundations of change that, where you, if you're strong, then you are really de-risking your change and starting to alter that 16%. You're looking at strategy, leadership, people, customer delivery and value. And if you strengthen your foundations across all of those areas, that's when you're setting yourself up for success. And that's when you're making sure your organization is one of those 16%.
And part to Jax's point earlier, you know, there's lots of examples of organizations who actually are getting that right.
Yeah.
And once they've strengthened those six disciplines, they're then using that same approach and leveraging it against not only their own organization, their customers, their partners, their suppliers, and their investors, just to name but a few. You know, it's in a way of actually being able to drive effective, sustainable, and enabling change across all aspects of your own business supply chain. And I think I come back to it, that the most effective organizations don't just measure this when they start a change journey. They use analytics, insight, etc., to continue to actually test this as a heartbeat of the organization. And you know, because at the end of the day, you know what? Every 1st of January, we all come out with this wonderful idea that we're all going to the gym. You know what? We're looking at all the stats. We're getting fitter. We're getting healthier, et cetera, et cetera. Then summer comes along. We normally disappear, drink too much, eat too much, lie in the sun, et cetera, et cetera. And if we don't go back to the gym, you know what? We suddenly become unhealthy again with that. So one of these, you know, I think the most successful companies are the ones that, as I say, get themselves in the right position to start with, understand what it needs to be fit, to be ready, to be successful, to enter into this journey. And then they use the same process over and over again just to ensure that they are not getting into bad habits, and they continually can be change ready, much like the CEO that you spoke about that you had dinner with last night.
I mean, you know, there's many career moments that I've had from, you know, the services that I've always provided and that we provide at Sullivan & Stanley, but, you know, one of them, I mean, there were two separate businesses. You know, one of them was, you know, Pat, can't thank you so much, from a CIO who said, the business phoned me up to say, can you stop delivering the change so quickly? We're not ready for the next release. But I think the one that really took it was the dinner with the CEO last night, who said, I no longer fear change anymore as a CEO. And you know, I sort of walked out of that restaurant with a big sort of spring in my step. That, you know, that's the energy that we want to bring to the business world. You know, you don't have to fear change. You know, you can simplify it with the right partners and the right mindset. And yeah, that's the way to make a dent in that change problem. So Martin, Jacqueline, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed that conversation. I always like to finish off with a practical ending. So for any change leaders out there, CEOs, anyone that's got private equity breathing down their neck, has got shareholders breathing down their neck. Martin, we'll go with you first. What advice have you got for leaders out there that are leading businesses and leading change in this decade, today, tomorrow, next quarter, next year and beyond?
Don't fear change. Find a partner who can actually help you with the right tools, collect the right data, use the predictive analytics, and help you prioritize the right activity so that, you know what, you've got a good chance of success.
Fantastic. Jacqueline?
Really simple from me. Just make sure you've got really strong foundations of change.
Fantastic. I'll share all of the links to some of the things that we signposted in this podcast in the show notes. So that'll be all there. Thank you both.
Look
forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Take
care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Change Society podcast. Sullivan & Stanley is an award-winning specialist change consultancy that deploys expert teams to solve the challenges companies face when undertaking change. To find out more, please head over to our website, sullivanstanley.com.